What if that couch or chair you may be sitting on was a little over 3 years old? The year was 1938 and a half. Someone comes to visit you. You talk. Your visitor asks, "Have you been hearing about all the ruckus over in Europe?" "I don't pay a lot of attention to it," you say. "Things seem to be changing," your guest says. "Yes, well, change is the one constant." And the two of you laugh it off and go on to other more domestic subjects. But what if your visitor had said, instead, "There's a war coming. It will start next year, and it won't end for 6. During its course, 50 million people will be lost. And another 50 million in the 5-year wake of it." Would you be terrified? Would you just say, "It's change"? Or more to the point, would they? And who are they? Well, Zin Fornori with Joel Skousen. We will be back. This is Coast to Coast AM. John B. in for George Nori tonight, and our guest is Joel Skousen. And I trust that little vignette a minute ago was not morose, verbose, or otherwise over the top for this hour of the morning. But that's just kind of how I see it. I have felt like this country was ripe for fascism for a long time. And I don't know, given the events and the escalating, ever-accelerating chain of events, looks like feudalism may follow the fascism. Joel, how did we come to do so much business with China? I've had this theory that once upon a time they contacted us and said, "Hey, you think that Great Wall of China is good? Let me tell you something. You ain't seen nothing yet. See, we have a lot of really cheap labor over there, and what we've done is build all these cities underground. It really doesn't matter because we have one point, I don't know how many billion of us, and if you launch on us and we lose half of them, still doesn't matter. We've still got 3 times your population in the standing army alone, so we're going to be friends or your head's coming off." What do you think about that theory?
Well, you know, as my good friend Dr. Stan Monteith, who runs Radio Liberty, has said, we've been for years building the best enemy that money could buy. And there's something to this Hegelian dialectic that these powers, the B, as they call them, or the globalists, have been working for years. I mean, even from the beginning of China, we are the ones that brought the communist powers to power in China. We pulled out the rug militarily under Chiang Kai-shek to allow Mao Zedong to win that war. And Caleb Marshall gave orders to Chiang Kai-shek to pull back and form a coalition government with Mao. He refused, and so he said, "Well, we're just going to cut off all military supplies to you," and he did. We brought Mao to power, and we've been helping
China. We financed the 17 Bolshevik Revolution, too, so why not do it for China, right?
That's right, and we pulled the rug militarily out of the white Russians, who could have beat the Reds in the bloody battles following the fall of the Kerensky regime in Russia. We were the ones who supported Lenin while he was waiting to come to power in Germany. I mean, our government has been behind so many of these communist revolutions. It's not, as we used to think in conservative circles growing up, that it was a bunch of communists in the State Department. Yes, there are a lot of leftists in the State Department. But overall, there are what we call globalists who are facilitating the inroads of communism so that they have plausible deniability that we didn't do it. It was the State Department employee, but they were the ones who protected them. They were the ones who brought them into the State Department. They were the ones who allowed them to feed information and arms to Castro and to undermine Batista so that they could take over Cuba. Our own State Department is the one who undermined Nicaragua and President Anastasio Somoza, very pro-Western. Sure, they all have a little bit of corruption problems. They're not perfect, but what did we put in their place? The Sandinistas? But what did we give us? But, you know, then the globalists can ride to the rescue and throw the communists out and replace them with a globalist government in a form of mercantilism or fascism, you know, that is supposed to be an improvement. This is really working both sides of the angle. So in answer to your question here, we're still building China. And it's very obvious. I mean, leaks and whistleblowers have come out of China saying very clearly, in military meetings, they talk about the future strike against the West, and particularly the United States, that they're going to continue to play this open door to the West while they build their economy so that they can build a blue water navy. They intend to join with Russia in a nuclear strike upon the West. probably at the latter part at this decade, and talk a little bit more about timing later on. But our government knows this, and that's the great treasonous secret that I've been warning about. Just as they knew that Hitler was coming to power, they financed his arms industry, and they played soft. It's very interesting, John, before every major world war, there's a major movement of disarmament. And look what we've just gone through with Russia, passing a treaty that is absolute suicide. The Russians have cheated on every single arms control treaty, and yet the excuse that the administration gave time and again, and not a, well, only one Republican tried to rebut this, but they said, we have got to have this treaty because we've lost now the right to inspect, and we're blind now about what Russia is doing. And yet, that's a big lie, because we never did inspect anything in Russia or everything that was there. We inspected the oldest and established missile installations, stuff clear back from World War II, but we were never allowed into their newest bunker city where they've got underground missile factories. It's called Yamato Mountain, big as the Washington, D.C. metro area underground. It's been operational since the year 2000. In 1997, the New York Times put a satellite photo on the front page talking about Yamato Mountain. What are the Russians up to? And it merely gave them an excuse to go to the CIA, and the CIA said, we're not worried about it, it's defensive. 3 years later, General Habiger of our missile forces, who had been over to Russia to do inspections, said, we weren't allowed into Yamato Mountain. We will never be allowed into it. They say it's just a mining thing, and our government is saying, and we don't know what's in there. And yet our government can say that we've inspected everything and that we're assured that Russia is complying, even though a congressional report has shown since 1995, the Russians, they've documented every single treaty violation, and we keep unilaterally disarming. This is a prelude to war. The
it's
West
interesting.
Always does this.
Yep.
So as to induce the enemy to strike, because they are fearful of striking. They don't know what kind of stuff we've got out in Area 51. And so we have to continue to be weaker and weaker to get them to strike. And when that strike comes, they come out of their bunkers and they'll say, oh, the Russians deceived us. We didn't know. Baloney, they didn't know. It was willful ignorance so as to set us up for what I think is going to be an excuse to get us into a new world order, a loss of sovereignty, because they'll basically hand us the mother of all terrorism, a nuclear strike on America.
Well, and
give them an excuse to wipe out the debt and to then throw us into the United Nations with military power, and I don't think we'll ever get our military or our individual national sovereignty back after that.
You know, you've got my brain firing on at least 10 out of 12. I'm trying to get all 12 of them going here, but you got the North Koreans over there. You know, we're hungry. We blow up world. We got nuke. We'll use it on you. No problem. So would it be too much of a stretch to suggest that the trigger for this next one is going to be, since China's economy depends on exports, if we do stop buying their stuff and their economy implodes, is that the trigger it's going to take to set this thing off?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I don't think this is going to happen until they don't need their export economy anymore. In other words, they intend, according to whistleblowers that have heard Chinese leaders talking, they've said, we intend to build our economy stronger than the West, then we will simply take out the military of the West. We will take over the economy and continue to sell to them, but under our control and at our prices.
This is inevitable, now, or can we stop it? And how do we stop it?
I'm not sure we can stop it at this time, because our problem is we have a government that is very ingenious about whenever you expose something wrong, they come up with this Team B. The Republicans come, we're here to save you. We're here to stop what Obama does. And they will not do it. They never do it. They only give us the facade. It's just like Newt Gingrich coming up in 1994 with his contract with America. And the first thing he came in when he got power in Congress was pass NAFTA and GATT, two globalist pieces of legislation that weren't even on the contract of America.
Well, this may be. Go ahead. Finish that thought.
And Newt Gingrich is back again, claiming that he's repentant of all his womanizing and written a book on God and America and trying to fake out the conservative Christian community into believing that he's one of them. They tried to foist Rudolph Giuliani on the Republicans in 2008, and it didn't work. And that's why I had to resurrect John McCain with six major newspapers coming out and endorsing him to bring him up from 2% in the polls to 15%. This is how they used the press to manipulate the public. It's why, for example, they were desperate to make sure that no political party, Democrat or Republican, were allowed to put their primaries ahead of Iowa and New Hampshire. Why? Because Iowa and New Hampshire have a whole bunch of populist-type people, independents, outnumber party registrations, and they're manipulable by the press. They want to make sure that the predicted front runners that the media proclaims, whether it was Bill Clinton or George Bush, get the front runner status confirmed by these first two primaries. They're manipulable, and that's why they work the system that way. And it didn't work. For the first time in many, many decades, it didn't work with Rudolph Giuliani, and that's why they had to scramble to keep Mitt Romney from surging to the front by throwing McCain in, and he was a lousy candidate. He's never been a conservative. He's been a government shill for many years. And now they're going to try to do the same thing in 2012. You know, you've got Sarah Palin, who can't win, that they continue to promote on Fox News. Mitt Romney, they may accept, for the first time ever, I heard George H.W. Bush say that he thought that Romney would be a good president. Now, that's the first time I've heard a globalist say anything good about Romney. And I think the reason they didn't want him in the first place is that, first of all, they didn't choose him. He's not one of their controlled puppets. But he's bent over backwards so much to try to please the establishment, the CFR advisors that he has, that I think maybe they realized maybe we could work with him and we wouldn't have to fight him so hard like we did in 2008. But in any case, I can tell you that they really want Newt Gingrich back in, but I don't think it's going to fly. They want somebody who will be a wolf in sheep's clothing.
And, you bet. And I would hate to think that the people are too comfortable in what is seems to be a lessening state of ignorance. Maybe the internet could actually interrupt the big plan by the people being able to educate themselves, but would that possibility be the trigger, to use that unfortunate word again, to what appears to be an attempt by the government to take over the internet and actually censor it at some future point? Because you know they'll try it once they get their hooks in it. Censorship is inevitable.
I think, John, that this whole WikiLeaks things here has all the smell of a government operation. In the first place, this was a very filtered set of cables. I'm very, very familiar with what top, you know, secret cables are, and there wasn't a single secret cable in that. It was embarrassing things. They were willing to sacrifice embarrassing information that would make this appear like a real crisis in order to get what I think they're going to get is an increased State Secrets Act, a subversion against whistleblowers. They're going to take down whistleblowers because, you know, when you're running a conspiracy of power, controlling government from afar, you really worry about whistleblowers. You've got a dark side of the CIA. You've got a dark side of the DEA, meaning people who do illegal acts. You've got a white side of the CIA, people who are doing legitimate good things, the white side of the FBI, and you've got the other side doing illegal acts, and you have crossover, and you have people really getting up the courage to say, I've got to tell the public about this. And I think what they're doing is creating laws through the excuse of prosecuting Julian Assange and others in WikiLeaks that it's just going to clamp down on dissent, clamp down on whistleblowers so that there are no more leaks coming out of government.
You think Assange is an asset or you think he's a patsy?
I think he could be either one. Usually they don't take a real full betrayer and put him in that. I think they take somebody who's got some kind of ideals that's manipulable, that won't look too deep. I think he's kind of in between, but he's clearly being used, clearly being used.
How outrageously dangerous, I think I know the answer to this one, is our southern border, just to come at you out of left field.
I mean, John, our southern border is kept open like a sieve, and the government has resisted shutting this down using every excuse in the book, never intended to finish the fence, which really is effective, you know, if you fence it off. You make them dig long, expensive tunnels, and we've got equipment to, you know, detect those like we did in the San Diego tunnel.
Right.
If it were really dangerous, and if there were really a lot of real terrorists out there, and we're creating more terrorists than there ever existed before by our intervention and occupation around the world, but if there were really a lot of real terrorists with capability, they'd be coming across the border in droves. They wouldn't be doing, doing crotch bombs on airliners. They'd be blowing up electrical pylons and the Amtrak lines down there in the southern states and blowing up buildings and in malls and terrorizing everything. And there's been nothing of that. Not a single terrorist crossing the border.
What do you think it is? I mean, do you think it's the drug money? You think somebody needs the money coming across? Or what is it?
Well, no, I think that there is a legitimate amount of economic refugees, you know, people coming over by the lure of making money. Things are very, very bad in Mexico, and the crime is just rising tremendously. There's a tremendous drug war going on, and the drug war is not as it appears. You know, there is a relationship, a seamless relationship between Mexico and the United States in fomenting the CIA drug pipeline. The CIA has had a drug pipeline ever since Vietnam, in the Iron Triangle, bringing drugs in and selling it and financing their black budget operations by those things. Now they really don't need that as much, but it still is useful, and they've got a lion by the tail that they've created. And the wars are really between all of the breakaways from the official cartel run by the CIA and the Mexican government. They bring whole truckloads of marijuana across the border. The drug-sniffing dogs go wild, and the DIA agents go up to their supervisor and say, we got to stop and break open this truck that's been sealed. And Washington, from the very top, always stops them from intervening in that. So there's a real evil system going on here. I mean, the reason we have Mexican military guarding these drug shipments and driving Humvees across the border is because they're part of the official drug pipeline. And it's a very evil system, and the great thing that's erupting now is that I think it's getting out of the control of the Mexican government. The competition for getting into the drug game is so high, and there are competing cartels, but it's really, the official government drug pipeline versus the aficionados that are trying to get in on the act that is causing the problem. I think it's going to end up giving the United States an excuse to go in and create a security partnership, part of a North American agreement for securing Mexico with U.S. troops and intervention. It will also be an excuse to take more efforts to control guns within the United States, to close the so-called gun show loophole, and that's not where they're getting their guns. I mean, the U.S. Has been allowing gun runners to operate in the Russians or the, the U.S. even bought 250,000 AK-47s and shipped them to Afghanistan. Now, why would they be doing that? Do our soldiers use those AK-47s? No, but the so-called Al-Qaeda uses them. Why is the U.S., buying AK-47s when they're a dime a dozen over there in Iraq?
I heard that story, too. I couldn't figure it out, unless they're trying to make it look like somebody else did it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's just like the CIA was caught with C-130s, leased C-130s, through one of their cutouts, the same thing they used during 9/11 for training of the so-called hijackers, but they used C-130s to ship rockets and even a helicopter to the IRA, and we owe that piece of information to a whistleblower who was part of the flight team and decided, hey, this isn't right. We're arming the IRA, just like the Britain.
This is very interesting, and I've got a couple of other expansive questions that I would like to have you just blow out of all proportion, even at this early hour of the morning. Joel Skousen is our guest. John Wells in for George Norrie, and right after this break, we will be back. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM. Thank you very much. In with Joel Skousen, and I don't know, I'm tempted to say we might ought to put our waders on because it's liable to get even a little deeper. You know, okay, the border's wide open. We're involved in a war that's gone on for years now in the Middle East. Would you mind giving me your opinion on exactly why we're in Afghanistan? I have a theory that China, the big industrial engine, is not going to be able to run on fossil fuel forever. Let's see, Ahmadinejad is trying to recreate the Persian Empire. He's about got the Straits of Hormuz surrounded. And so China's going to go with nuclear power. Is there a lot of uranium lying around there? I've heard a rumor that there are several trillions of dollars worth of strategic minerals there. Is that what we're guarding? Because I can't imagine that we're under much threat from people who live in that environment. What's your take on that, Joel?
Well, no, actually, we know where most of the strategic minerals are in the world, and they don't have a great deal in Iran. They do in South Africa, and that's why we undermined the South African government, turned it over to the ANC, which is a communist front. China holds a great deal of the industrial minerals we need, and Russia holds the rest, most of them coming out of Siberia. So we really have made sure that we're going to be held hostage in the next war to a lack of a shortage of minerals. What's going on in the Middle East, though, I believe, plays into the scenario of the Third World War, which I feel very strongly to warn about, that is coming at the as early as the end of this decade, and that is that there needs to be a mechanism for making out for destroying the image of the U.S. as the great bastion of liberty and making it the bully of the world. And literally, our intervention around the world has done just that. Remember how popular Americans were when the phony fall of communism occurred, and this was a carefully crafted deception. The communist government actually just went underground.
Sure.
Made themselves the oligarchs that are pretending to fight against Putin, who's their puppet, owned lock, stock, and barrel by him. But in any case, remember how popular it was for the Russians finally to be free and to feel good about the West and be open to free market technology and things. And who did we send over there to do free market reforms in Russia? We hired Harvard University, who was nearly a Marxist political science department, and they sabotaged that. At the same time, under Bill Clinton, we went into the Balkans, and we just excoriated Serbia and the Yugoslav Republic and financed communist revolutionaries in Albania to come into Kosovo and drive out the Kosovarians and blame it on the Serbs. Suddenly the Russians started to hate the West, and we turned all of the Slavic people really into anti-Western, anti-American people. Now we're doing it in the Middle East to all of the Muslims by continuing to go in after them. Now, I think we actually went in to Afghanistan. I mean, this is the big picture view, that is, we're provoking hatred among others so that Russia and China will feel justified in taking down the bully of the world. But there are also various pecuniary motives here. Oil is one of those. There was a major pipeline that the Taliban in Afghanistan refused to let go through. That's now been approved, you know, if they can ever get over the war aspect, which probably will not happen in Afghanistan because of the corruption in Karzai. In President Karzai, but the drug issue was always a very real thing. We have not only not stopped and shut down the drug, we've actually taken it over and infused it into the normal CIA drug pipeline, and those profits of drugs are being used to pay off most of the Taliban and the other players in Afghanistan, and it's still not working. Of course, there's a great deal of hatred against the United States, but it's not Al-Qaeda. That's just the excuse for going in there. That's a CIA creation, combination with the Saudis. Osama bin Laden has been dead now for over 4 years. And we still continue to manufacture these phony videos of old footage of Osama bin Laden. These are just pure disinformation to keep the war on terror alive. And the war in Iraq, of course, had nothing to do with 9/11 either. Had nothing to do with that. Saddam Hussein was our puppet from old CIA days. We have just as much corruption in there now as was ever there under Saddam Hussein. We still have the torture chambers going on with Iraqis. We've done nothing to increase anything. In fact, the infrastructure of the country is worse. But it has given us an excuse to establish a huge military base there, four major military bases which are never going to be cleared out. Despite what Prime Minister al-Maliki said in the past week about this is final, there was all kinds of loopholes that we'll see. He actually had to say that because he had to make a unity government with Sadrists coming into Iraq who are hardliners against the United States. So he has to say this, but you watch. It will never happen. In fact, we've got the biggest embassy in the world there now specifically to oversee what's going to come up, in my prediction, is a major Middle East war starting with the attack on Iran. You know, you mentioned North Korea. I believe North Korea is being preserved. I mean, you look at the contrast between Iran and North Korea, supposedly part of the same axis of evil, and yet Iran can't do anything right. We are going to attack Iran. It's still on the books. Admiral Mullen, Joint Chiefs of Staff, says we are going to attack Iran. Everybody knows it. The military is loaded for bear up there. It's just a matter of getting the right provocation. And yet North Korea is much further along with nuclear weapons. It's the pariah of the world. It's got the worst, most horrendous regime torturing its people. You know, the largest armed camp right across. It has had 162 acts of war against the South, including 17 deaths of Americans since the armistice in 1951. And we've done nothing to ever do anything. In fact, we've guaranteed that we will not intervene militarily. We've guaranteed no regime change. We're bending over backwards to preserve North Korea and do nothing against its provocations, including launching missiles. And we do everything against Iran. Now, there has to be a reason for that. And that's because the United States does intend to provoke more hatred against the U.S. in the Middle East. I think what's going to happen in an attack on Iran, which will probably occur this year, it'll start with an Israeli strike against that. They'll retaliate against American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that'll give us the excuse to go in and attack Iran. But it will also provoke a major regional war between Hezbollah and Israel, Syria, and perhaps Egypt that will allow Israel to, you know, they're going to take some hits. I mean, the Arabs are going to throw thousands of missiles. It will overwhelm the aero defense, missile defense system, the hard iron dome system that they've got in Israel. But Israel will probably come out of this alive because of U.S. participation.
You think they'll go nuclear? You think Israel would?
It's possible. I think that the U.S. wants to get the nuclear genie out of the closet so that it also hands to Russia and China the excuse to use nuclear weapons, and it won't be a first use anymore. I'm sure that if, for example, and I think North Korea is being preserved as the trigger event, not Iran, but North Korea later on as a trigger event to start World War III, and they'll do it by attacking the South. In fact, they've got so much artillery strength and so much of an overwhelming army in North Korea that the only way the U.S. could stop them from killing all of our 26,000 troops there is by using tactical nuclear weapons, which are stored in South Korea. And once they use the first use of nuclear weapons, I think it would be very easy to see Russia and China launch their long-awaited nuclear strike on America. That's why they're so worried about missile defense, is because they do intend to strike.
Now, Joel, I gotta tell you, one of the songs I think that I should have asked Dan to pull would be Why Get Up by the Fabulous Thunderbirds, because this is pretty dark. I mean, you don't see any way out of this, do you? I mean,
because the powers that be that control both governments are determined, I'm convinced, to cover for the Russians and the Chinese. I mean, look, we give a yearly Pentagon report on the Chinese missile or the Chinese military threat. It's very downplayed. It doesn't tell about any of the secret stuff we really know about. And they always have an excuse at the end to say, we don't really think China's going to do anything about this. We just need to. And then, but notice there's never a report about Russia, which is far more dangerous, has far more weapons of mass destruction. We have whistleblowers galore coming out of Russia saying they're building nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons in these underground bunkers in Yamato Mountain that they won't ever let you see. And we've even the Obama administration agreed in this latest treaty that was just passed that we would have even less access to inspections in the new treaty than we had on the former. And that was nothing in the former. So they're setting us up. Now, with all that said, John, let me assure you that nuclear war is not the end of the world. It is not a nuclear winter scenario. It is very survivable. And I'm an expert in that kind of survival. I've written the books, The Secure Home, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, specifically, because even though our government won't warn people, I want people to know you can survive. It's relatively easy to protect against fallout. You just have to make sure you're out of these blast areas.
Well, you know that there were some pictures going around the net where they showed a picture of Detroit, which looks like it's been nuked. Bless you all up there. I mean, seriously.
Hiroshima, or Nagasaki, which has been rebuilt.
Yeah, it looks like Disneyland, only better.
Yeah, we've got the wasteland, and Hiroshima is now a modern metropolis. But you see, you can survive. There are a lot of people that survived even Hiroshima and Nagasaki because they were behind the shielding of buildings, etc. And with just a little bit of overhead cover, you know, in a basement space and things, people can survive if they're out of the blast zone areas. There are about 15 major cities that I think are inevitable targets that are going to get struck someday, where the military complex is so integrated with the city, like San Diego, Colorado Springs, Seattle, Jacksonville, Florida, Kings Bay, Georgia, Norfolk, Virginia, Washington, D.C., probably New York because of its computers and financial system. They're going to get hit, and I think there's going to be probably around could be as much as 20% of Americans die in this strike, but the rest of the nation will, the biggest problem that they're going to face is the EMP strike that precedes these nuclear weapons that takes out all of the electrical grid. You can imagine what this country would be like without any electricity for 6 months to a year, as it takes that long to knit things back together. We're talking about panic in these major cities. Within 2 or 3 days, all of the food will be gone. There'll be no shipments coming in. And people are going to start to pillage and move out as they work through neighborhoods. And I mean, even good people will be forced to pillage because how do you survive that? They're just, we've promoted urbanization and the efficiencies of this, and it's a trap because it only works if everything works smoothly. We really need to be unurbanizing. We need to encouraging people to have more self-sufficiency. Their own alternative power, generators. You know, even after Y2K, people started selling the generators and say this was all a big hoax. Fortunately, about half of the people said, hey, I like this preparedness. I feel better being prepared.
Well, yeah, so, yeah. It's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. Joel, we're going to take a little break here and then come back and talk about some alternative scenarios like survival maybe. Yes? John B. Wells in for George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. In case I didn't mention this earlier, this is John Wells in for George Norrie tonight, and we're speaking with Joel Skousen. Joel, if you have kids, what do you tell them? How do you sleep at night? And how the bloody Hades am I supposed to sleep tonight after this interview? Because it sounds like a real impasse on a global scale.
Well, the thing that is inevitable is that we're going to have war. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I mean, these people won't take no for an answer. They've been working at this for years. I mean, this isn't something that just started last year with the Obama administration. This has been something going on in Republicans and Democrats for years. I mean, I could tell you stories about the evils of what we did during World War II and how we betrayed our own people at the end of the war, sold them out to Stalin and Russia. We left 5,000 American troops in Stalin's hands and never demanded them back. They were tested on with medical experiments. We had troops, you know, from the Vietnam War, MIAs and POWs that went to Russia and China for merit medical experiences, whistleblowers out of Eastern Europe that testified it. McCain covered it up, Kerry covered it. I mean, our government has just been into it up to its neck, denying to the American people the outrageous information. And this is just a continuation of that, John. What I'm telling you is not something new to the United States. I mean, Roosevelt not only knew about Pearl Harbor, Robert Stinnett's book, Day of Deceit, Attack on Pearl Harbor, details from classified documents that are now unclassified, how there was a 6-point plan to provoke Japan to attack us so that we could get us into the war.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
And he sacrificed 3,000 people there, and he sacrificed 3,000 people on 9/11 in order to get us into this phony war on terror that they continue to drive home. And you know what I'm really concerned about is the rising of a police state, and it isn't what people think it is. It isn't that you have to have martial law and Gestapo running around all day long and controlling everyone. That would destroy the economy. They're smarter than that now. We already have the three prime aspects necessary to establish a police state, and that is we have to have, first of all, a rationale or an excuse, an enemy, that is the false threat of terrorism. We have to have a lot of thug-like individuals hired into police departments who will, in fact, play rough with the American people. And third, we have to have a judiciary who will not prosecute the police. And believe me, I'm compiling stories that you wouldn't believe, John, about how much police abuse is going on and how when people go to sue the police in court for false arrest and for abuse, they get lied to. The police have falsified statements about things that they did. We have people being tasered on the drop of a hat and then the And we have police falsifying that these people attacked them and they didn't. In fact, this TSA, the most outrageous thing is not the groping that's occurring. It's what happens when you resist and you get taken into the back room and then you proclaim your rights and they really start to take you down if you try to talk about the Constitution and your rights. And they bring in the police, they stomp on you, they put the handcuffs on, and then you go to, and they won't let you record any of this, they won't let you have a witness in there.
And then when they
go before a judge, the police have falsified the reports saying you yelled at them, you threatened them, and it's just your word against them. In every case, there hasn't been a single exception, John. The courts have ruled with the police. And this means when we can have indefinite detention, the court precedent by Marsha Cook, the district judge who ruled in the Jose Padilla case, that his 3 years as citizen of confinement did not violate the speedy trial provision of the Constitution because they had not yet charged him with a crime, means that she just opened the door, and nobody protested, neither did the Supreme Court, opened the door to indefinite detention, that as long as they just label you as a terrorist suspect, and they don't charge you with a crime, they can keep you in prison indefinitely, and habeas corpus is gone.
Well, now, that means we have
a police state already. Just because they aren't using it doesn't mean they don't, because every time a person gets taken down in the TSA, handcuffed and taken out, they have been subjected to a police state. And
well, that's the thing about fighting the feds, you know. You don't have to be guilty of anything. All you have to be is accused. It'll take everything you have to defend yourself against them if they decide that you're a worthy target. But you're a very intelligent man, but I'm going to drag some hope out of you if it's the last thing I do. It was my idea to go dark tonight, but I'll tell you, I don't think much of it. I'm getting depressed here. So we're going to look at the bright side of this. And I still want to know, what do you tell your kids? John Wells in for George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.